WMFO Medford. Unlike milk, long-distance telephone calls, and library books, there is no due date, tolls, or expiration in the grand hour. Pre-recorded.
Thank you, Digital Henry. Good morning. It's the 18th of August, 2021. My name is Arthur, and this is the Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org, Medford. I have been playing several Jack Webb series that preceded Dragnet, but in 1949, before Dragnet, he did start appearing in more notable dramas like what we're going to hear here in the first half of the show. This is Escape, titled Night in Havana, with an original air date of the 22nd of October, 1949. Thanks for listening.
Tired of the everyday routine? Ever dream of a life of romantic adventure? Want to get away from it all?
Escape, designed to free you from the four walls of today for a half hour of high adventure.
Tonight we escape to the waterfront of Havana and to an underworld where men live and sometimes die by a bizarre code of their own. As Burnham Carter tells it in his exciting story, Night in Havana. Something was wrong. Halfway up the street of Pius Works that evening, I realized that something was wrong. None of the regulars were to be seen. Assuredly, something was wrong. But what? And then I remembered that since I had decided to live an honest life, it was really no concern of mine. As I came abreast of the Why Worry restaurant, I saw the Dutchman, Maru, who owned a cabin cruiser, and who was, consequently, a man of some prominence in the smuggling trade. He was standing on the weighing machine near the door, slapping it with his big hands.
Tio, you have a penny?
A penny? Si.
Thanks. 193 pounds. When I reach 195, I'll switch from beer to coffee. When I hit 190, I go back to beer.
You'd like the rise and fall of the tide in Havana Harbor.
2 pounds of beer to go. If you're headed for the Cafe Mosca, I'll join you.
Well, bueno. Hey, come along.
Tio, got a few dollars to lend me?
I have not seen any money in weeks. I was hoping to find a purchaser for my gun this evening.
Oh, Tio, you're kidding. You're going to sell your gun?
Si.
How will you live?
Honestly.
Honestly,
Maru,
you?
Please, you are attracting attention. Quiet, you have attracted attention. Quiet.
What?
The police, Lieutenant Molina, across the street.
Oh, here's a cop. Who's that with you?
Sergeant Ortiz, newly promoted, very ambitious and...
No, I missed the highlight game last night, Maru. I remained at home and read instead.
You, stand where you are.
Why, it is Lieutenant Molina and Sergeant...
Search these ones, Sergeant.
Nothing, Lieutenant. This one conceals nothing.
Right, you see, I lead a dull and peaceful life.
I see that you do. Use your handkerchief, Theo. Your lips bleeding. They seemed upset.
I bear them no ill will. They have a hard life, too. Is he still bleeding, huh?
Yeah. You can doctor it at the Cafe Mosca.
They must have been told to get someone for something.
You know, I held my breath during that frisk. I was afraid you might be carrying your gun.
I was. But when I saw them coming toward us, I put it in your pocket.
Oh.
May I have it now, please?
Here. That is not what I would call honorable, Tio.
Maru, there is so little honor in this world that one is just not able to toss it about indiscriminately. Tell me, does my lip look bad?
It's beginning to swell.
Amalia will be very upset.
Amalia? Who owns the Moscow?
Yes, we are betrothed.
No, I did not know that. Congratulations.
Gracias.
Come. I buy you a beer. Come on, step up to the bar.
Later, Brad. Thank you, but now I must see Amalia.
Tio, little one. Oh, I see your lip.
Oh, be nothing, Amalia. Nothing, baby. Police were in a statue and more. There is nothing.
Oh, the police, yes. They were here. A lieutenant. Wait, he gave me his card. Yes, Lieutenant Molina.
Tell me, did he mention the cause of all this ill feeling?
An American tourista. A very rich one. A very gay one. She has been robbed.
And so soon after the police chief let it be known that American tourists were not to be robbed.
Si.
Amalia, what did she lose?
An emerald. An emerald of great size.
Oh.
She had it in her purse, left the purse in the Café Diablo. Tio. You had nothing to do with this matter, did you?
No, my fair one, nothing. I wish I had.
You promised, Tio, you promised.
I know, but... Amalia, it's not easy to be honest. I would have been honest years ago. Could I have earned money?
Little one, listen to me. After each of your transactions, they have kept you in the jail. It is like my account books. One malefaction, one payment in jail.
Si.
Now you owe them nothing. There are no debts.
But you have a debt. The mortgage of $2,100 on this cafe.
Oh, let that be. Little by little, we shall pay it.
But there is my pride to consider, my dove. To this marriage, you bring the Cafe Mosca. I bring nothing.
Ay, Tio. You bring your love. Is that nothing?
Oh, in your eyes it is much, see, but in the eyes of the bank, it's nada. Who is this American tourista who carries emeralds in her purse?
Huh? Mrs. Turner. She is here with her husband. They have great wealth. They come from Miami in their own cruiser. It is called the Seabird, and it is almost as large as Maru's. Tio. Promise me you will not become involved.
I promise that if I do, it will be within the law.
Oh, little one, I beg
you. It will be within the law, I swear it to you. Did Lieutenant Molina mention a reward?
No. He said that if I acquired information concerning the emerald, I was to inform either him or Mr. and Mrs. Turner at the Hotel Flores.
Well, perhaps it would be best to learn whether there is a reward and of a size sufficient to warrant time and effort. I am going to see Senor Stern Amalia.
Tio, little one, I am afraid.
Oh, there is nothing to fear. An honest man need never have anything to fear. Let me have Lieutenant Molina's card, my dove. It may help me to impress the American.
Yes?
Senor Stern.
Yes?
I am Lieutenant Molina of the secret police. In my car.
Come in, Lieutenant Molina. Tell me, is there another detective with that name? It seems to me...
Well, it is a common patronym, like in your country, Smith.
Yes. Have you found the emerald?
Regrettably, Senor, no. But I would like to talk about it.
Well, I'll call my wife. She's the one who lost it. The knucklehead. Lucille!
Ducky.
This is Lieutenant Molina of the secret police.
Ah, it is a great honor, Senora.
You see that, Ducky? It's just my hand.
I saw. Sit down, Lieutenant. You care for a drink?
No, thank you. Not while on duty.
What's on your mind, Lieutenant? My wife and I have a dinner date
tonight. It has occurred to us, the chief and I, that although we will, of course, eventually catch the thief, it will take some time. You understand, there are 1,000 rat holes and rats of many nations and much cunning.
We don't have much time. Mrs. Turner and I are leaving Havana tomorrow afternoon.
And that brings me precisely to my point. The matter of a reward.
No. Not another nickel. If I can't grease the wheels with $750, they just won't be greased. I'm a reasonable man, Lieutenant, but I'm no sucker.
Of course you are not. 750.
Ducky, I'm sure the lieutenant knows his business. If he thinks the reward ought to be boosted, then boost it. I want that emerald back.
Now, look, Lucille,
would $1,000 be better, Lieutenant?
Oh, indeed it would, Senora.
Then offer $1,000, Ducky.
You see, Senor Stern, whether I go between...
Yeah, I know how it works. Okay, call it $1,000.
$1,000? It would not pay the mortgage on the Cafe Mosca, of course, but considering that virtue is said to be its own reward for being, it was handsome. I spent the next 2 hours seeking knowledge of the emerald, but the activities of the police had forced the best of the regulars into hiding, and I learned nothing. And then, as I was walking along the street of souls in the old city, a voice spoke to me from the darkness of the gateway to the ancient convent known as El Corazón.
Tio Martinez.
Your servant.
Got a matter we'd like to talk to you about.
We?
Him and me.
Oh, your pardon. I could not see your friend in the shadows.
We got a mutual acquaintance. Georgie Young.
Georgie Young? Oh, see. I have not seen him since the profitable years of Prohibition.
Before we left Miami, he said to look you up if we ever needed someone to work an angle. He gave us his letter of introduction.
Oh, thank you. Strike a match, please.
Yeah.
A little closer, please. Dear friend Theo. These muchachos are okay. I have a deal with them, just like in the old days, Georgie. Well, you know my name. What is yours?
Moore, Gus Moore.
My name's none of your business.
Stop it, Leo, will you? His name's Leo Walsh. We only been here in Cuba a little while.
You said that you needed somebody to work an angle.
Yeah. We got a shipment on the Florida coast, just beyond Key West. We want it brought here tonight. There's 400 rifles.
Please, I am not interested in the nature of your cargo. You tell me that you are importers, and that is all an honest man need know.
Yeah.
Is it Georgie Young who provides you with the merchandise?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Just like in the old days. It can be done, gentlemen, but it will cost money, of course. $1,500.
That's highway robbery. Let me rough him up a little.
Stop it, Leo, will you? Okay, Martinez, $1,500. Cash on delivery.
Half of it now.
$300 now.
I'm sorry, no.
Well, that's all the cash we have.
How do you propose to get more?
How much is this worth?
The American Tourista's emerald.
Huh?
What's so funny?
Oh, just the ways of fortune. I'm sorry, you would not understand.
You talk too much.
Yeah. See, one of my great failings.
I can fix that.
Cut it out, Leo. Well, how about it? That rock's worth more than $1,200.
Oh, much more. But the question is, what can one unload it for? Tell me, how did you acquire this?
A dame I picked up at a bar while the husband was dead drunk. Well?
I will make the arrangements. You give me $300 on the emerald.
Yeah, you get the $300 now as a binder. I'll hand you the stone when you've delivered.
Very well, I agree. Now, you listen carefully to me. You will both meet me at the Cafe Mosca at 11 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
We shall drive from there to a certain beach where we pick up the boat. Is that clear?
Yeah. Leo will meet you.
And you?
Oh, I'm staying at the van. I got to make arrangements for the truck. I'll meet the boat when it comes back and hand over the emerald. Just tell me where.
The beach at Marianao. There's a dirt road. You cannot miss this. Now, 3 hours to Key West, 15 minutes to load, 3 hours back to Cuba. Mm-hmm. The boat will arrive at Marianao by 5 tomorrow morning. Is it well?
Yeah. Here's your $300.
Much thanks, senor.
You know what I do to chappies who talk too much?
Stop it, Leo, will you? You'll meet at the Musky at 11.
It will be my pleasure.
Well, is that coffee you drink, Maru?
Oh, sit down, Tio, sit down. Yeah, it's coffee, all right. I hit 195 a half hour ago.
Well...
What's up?
If you're not too busy tonight, there's a little shipment to be moved in from Key West.
Oh, how much?
$1,000 for you.
And for you?
Only 100.
Go on, what do you think? I'm stupid.
Oh, you're a devil. One can hide nothing from you. Very well, I receive 150. Is it a deal?
What time do we leave?
Around 11.
I'll have support ready just off Guanabaco. You know the dock, sir?
Yes.
Bring the $1,000 with you.
I will give you $1,000 tomorrow.
soon after we return.
Bring it with you, or we do not even leave. Well?
I will bring it with me.
Good. Have some coffee.
No, gracias. It is necessary now to see Amelia. Until 11.
Until 11.
Tio, I was worried, little one. You were gone so long.
Oh, I had much business to transact. Oh, Amelia, I am working on a deal, a very big deal. So big that I need $1,000 to swing it.
Tio.
Sisi, I have 300 and I need 700 more. Amelia, will you lend it to me?
I have but 800 in the whole world.
Well, lend me 7. Oh, if this deal proceeds as planned, Amelia, you and I will be married this week, and then I shall settle down as an honest cafe keeper.
Oh, Tio, for that I would give all the money there is.
Where is this boat? I don't see it.
Impatient, Senor Walsh. It's the end of the dock.
A dock, he calls it. Some crummy dock.
No, quiet, quiet, please. Maru.
Here, Tio.
Captain Maru, this is Senor Leo Walsh.
Uh-huh. Yeah. You have some money, Tio?
Here. $1,000 has agreed. Senor Walsh will guide you to the exact spot at Key West. And, gentlemen, I wish you both a good journey.
Save your wishes for somebody else. You're coming with us.
No. I make it a point never to...
I say you are, so does this.
I have a repugnance for guns between associates.
And I don't trust people who talk so much. You're coming with us. Now get in.
I shall do as you say.
All right, now you, Skipper.
Thank you.
Some tub.
You'll never see a faster one.
How fast?
40 knots.
All right, shove off. How come you're so quiet, Big Mouth?
Oh, I was just thinking. I was thinking that the life of honesty contains almost as much interest as the kind I have formerly led. In 3 hours, we were passing through the Florida Keys. Maru had no difficulty in following Senor Walsh's directions. There was a place where a finger of land cut into the water, an old rum-runner's landing base which I remembered well. A truck was waiting, and 3 men who came forward as we tied to the dock of rotting planks. Senor Walsh spoke to them briefly, and in 10 minutes the heavy crates were on board and we were off again, clearing the land quietly at a low speed and then roaring into the open.
Come on, pour it on, pour it on.
I'm giving it full throttle now. Relax, Sonny.
Listen, Squarehead.
You talking to me?
Who else? I don't like for you to call me Sonny.
I do it because you're so bright.
How would you like a third eye?
Senor Walsh, Maru, enough, enough. Carry this as far as you please once we are on shore, but until then...
I led
them to the squabbling, stretched out on the bench in the cockpit, my head on my arms, gazing into the sky, and soothed by the powerful hum of the engines, so steady that they were in themselves a sort of silence. I thought of Amelia, and how soft and comfortable she was. And that we were both at the right age for marriage. Steady people who knew that what we had was worth a dozen romantic flights to the moon. And I thought of how now there would be a little money for the raising of the mortgage and the Café Mosca. And then I dozed. And then...
What's the matter? How come you cut the motor?
Shut up. Pio, are you awake? Do you hear?
See. Where are your binoculars?
Binoculars? What are you looking for?
Coast Guard.
Where are we, Maru?
About 2 miles off the coast between Matanzas and Havana.
I see them. They're to the west about the same distance out. What is the time?
4:20. Sun will be up in less than 2 hours. Which way are they heading?
I cannot... There's a searchlight. They see us.
They were tipped off. They were looking for us. Somebody talked. Martinez,
shut up.
It's radar. They're also equipped. I have heard that. The Comtora.
Dump the cargo. When they come, we've been fishing.
No, every set I got is tied up in those boxes.
I said, dump the gun.
And I said, no, we'll run for it. This boat's faster than that one.
At this angle, they have us cut off from the open sea. If we go west, we pass Havana. If we go east, Matanzas. As soon as we move, the radio for help, they call.
And I said, we'll run for it. Now take the wheel, fat boy, and pour it on. But on, they're moving fast.
Aye, come on, Tio.
No, you don't. This does. Get back to the wheel.
Careful, Maru. Careful, he's frightened.
Put away your gun, Sonny.
Stand where you are.
I said...
Shoot
me, will you?
Enough,
Maru,
enough.
Its
spine has cracked like a banana
stalk.
Enough, I think.
Tio,
I hurt. I hurt bad.
Lie down here. Let me see.
Well?
Ugly, Maru. Very ugly.
Help me to the wheel.
Yeah.
Then drop the dinghy and roll to shore. I try to make it back to Key West.
You need care immediately. We'll both go to shore in the dinghy.
At my boat, the Coast Guard.
I will turn it out to sea and set the throttles. We'll give them a run for their money.
But when they overtake her, they'll find the cargo. They know the boat is mine.
One step at a time, Maru. At the moment, we will do as I say. First, we feed Senor Wars to the fishes. And the dinghy goes over the side. Then you and I. I landed the dinghy only a short distance below the place where I'd left the car. Before 5:30, Maru was in good hands and I was at the Flores Hotel, knocking at the door of the suite occupied by Senor and Senora Stern. At that moment, I would have surrendered all thoughts of profit for this night's labor in return for assurance that only Amalia's $700 would not be lost.
Lieutenant Molina. Now, this is a suite.
I give you a thousand apologies, Senor. Only an emergency forces me to do this. We can't get your emerald now. Do you understand?
Yeah, sure. But
only we need your cruiser. You must come with me in your cruiser. And now. I assure you it is our only chance. There is no danger, Senor.
All right, I'll get dressed.
I'll be waiting for you across the street in the black touring car. You come quickly, wear dark clothes, bring the money. But quickly, Senor, quickly.
Where are we going?
We are bound for the beach called Marianao.
I never heard of it.
Has a wooden pier. It should be just about light enough to distinguish. He's arriving. Hey, you have brought the cash.
Yeah. How much do I have to pay?
The maximum, Senor, $1,000. They would not do it for less, I am sorry.
No, it's okay. I didn't think you could keep him down even to that. Am I on course?
Yes, exactly on course. We are almost there. I think that you had better give me the money now.
Yeah. It's in my right hip pocket, Lieutenant. Help yourself.
Much thanks. Senor, I am sorry that our original laxity in guarding the possessions of your wife has put you to all this trouble.
No, forget it. It's one piece with the rest of the trip. I've had a lousy time.
Oh, I am most sorry. We naturally prefer to have the tourists love Cuba.
No, it's not your fault. I was mostly too drunk to see any of
them. I have always tried. Senor, there is more than $1,000 in this pocket. It's 1,100.
Oh, yeah. I meant to tell you. The thousands for the emerald, the other hundreds for you, for all of your courtesy and attention.
Oh, regulations forbid me to accept, Senor. But since it would be discourteous, much thanks. Hey, we are past Caminitas now, I think. Yes. There is the dock at Maranao. Hey, let me take the wheel.
Hey, someone on shore is blinking a light there. Three times.
I have noticed.
Hey, what are you doing? Heading out to sea?
No. I will back in. So. And now comes the most important part, Senor. Now, when I bring the boat to a halt at the dock, you must take the wheel and keep your hand on the throttle with the motor running. And when I say to you, now, you throw in the clutch and full speed ahead. Do you understand, Senor?
Well, sure, but why? It's all arranged, isn't it?
You see, it is arranged, and this is the most crucial part of the arrangement.
Okay, whatever you say, Lieutenant.
All right, you take the wheel. Now remember, keep your hand on the throttle.
Don't forget easy.
Here comes my man along the dock now. Remember, when I say now.
Go ahead, let's get this over with.
Senor Moore?
Martinez?
Si. Everything has gone well.
Where's Ward?
At the wheel.
Oh, good. Throw me a line. I'll get my boys to start unloading.
First, before you tie us up, we will conclude our affair, huh? You have the emerald for me?
Oh, yeah.
take it.
Good. Much thanks. Here is our cable. Make fast the bone, eh?
Yeah, I got it.
Now, senor, now! Lie down on the deck.
What?
But quickly. You will not be surprised forever. Lie down, stay there.
Well, I don't understand.
I think we'll soon be out of range.
You lead an interesting life, Molina.
At this moment.
When I saw you hand him the cable, I was sure I'd rip the stern off her as soon as I gave it throttle.
Well, senor, I took the precaution to untie it on our side first. Look, the sun is rising.
Senor,
do you know of any satisfaction to compare with that accompanying a good job, well done?
Three days later, I was sitting at a table in the Café Moscow with Maru. His wounds still troubled him, and he had lost much weight. A matter he was remedying as quickly as he could.
Two more beers.
Yeah, better make it three. Visitor approaches. Uh-huh. No, don't turn your head. It's Lieutenant Molina.
Oh, they found my boat.
You are ready with the story.
It was stolen while I was ill. I know nothing of it.
Bueno, I will testify to it.
No,
Maru. I have lost my taste for reading. I now spend most evenings at the highlight games, and I find
Captain
that
Maru? Yeah? The Coast Guard has found a boat that belongs to you. Do you have so many that one may be lost without your feeling the necessity of reporting it?
I've been ill. I've not been down to the harbor these 3 days.
I have a question to ask.
Hmm. Ask it, then.
They found several large crates on board.
They did?
Do you know what we discovered in them? Scrap metal.
Scrap metal? I use it for ballast. Careful, beer.
See, to celebrate my wedding, which occurs this afternoon.
So I have heard. You are going to lead an honest life, Tio?
See. I have been experimenting with it, and I find that it suits me.
Well, keep it confidential. Otherwise, the budget for the police department may be cut to the bone.
Goodbye, Lieutenant. Go with God.
You heard what he said? The crates contain scrap metal.
I'm not surprised. In the note my friend Georgie Young sent to me, he wrote that he was in on a deal just like in the old days.
Huh?
Well, in the old days, he sold many a bootlegger barrels of whiskey which contained only water.
Oh.
In that way, you see, he did not break the law and may be said to have earned his money honorably. As I may be said to do, too.
You call owning a cafe earning money honorably?
Well, it depends on the clientele.
Huh?
And in that respect, Maru, perhaps it would be better after the wedding, of course, if you took your custom elsewhere.
Suppose I tell you that from now on, I will be as honest as you yourself. Will you let me patronize this bar?
Oh, gladly, Maru. But, of course, I will be doubly watchful of the cash register.
Escape is produced and directed by William N. Robeson. Tonight we have presented Night in Havana by Burnham Carter, adapted for radio by Walter Brown Newman. Featured in the cast were Tony Barrett as Theo, Alan Reed as Maru, and Janet Nolan as Amelia and Mrs. Sterner. Also heard were Ted Von Elst, Bill Conrad, Jeff Corey, and Jack Webb. Special music was arranged and conducted by Del Castillo. Next week...
You are tortuously worming your way inch by inch through a narrow pipe deep under the ground. Unable to turn back, not knowing what lies ahead. Possible death or escape.
Next week, we escape with William Corcoran's grim story, The Blue Wall. Good night, then, until the same time next week when once again we offer you Escape.
If a natural disaster comes knocking, how prepared is your family? You can't just close the door on earthquakes, floods, or hurricanes and hope they go away. That's why it's important to make a plan now, ready.gov/plan has the tools and tips you need to prepare your family for an emergency. So if disaster shows up at your doorstep, you'll be ready. Visit ready.gov/plan and make a plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Thank you, lads, and thank you, Ad Council, for that FCC obligation. The first half of the program, we heard the nationally played Escape, titled Night in Havana, with an original air date of the 22nd of October, 1949. That was the year, I believe, that Jack Webb debuted Dragnet, although he might have went and did some Pat Novak right before Dragnet aired. I was going to get into all that this week, but I was out last week, so I haven't got a chance to go back over it all. I was going to, for this little anthology here of Jack Webb I've been playing for the last several weeks, excluding last week. So for the second half of the program, I will feature Dragnet. My name is Arthur, and you're listening to The Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org, Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio. So we'll go ahead with this episode of Dragnet called The Big Stop, with an original air date of the 4th of May, 1954. Thanks for listening.
Ladies and gentlemen, the story you are about to hear is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent.
Dragnet.
You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned to homicide detail. A killer is loose in your city. You don't know who he is or where to find him. You don't know who his victim will be. Your job, stop him.
It was Tuesday, May 13th. It was warm in Los Angeles. We were working the day watch out of homicide detail. My partner's Frank Smith. The boss is Captain Warman. My name's Friday. I was on my way back from handwriting, and it was 8:26 a.m. when I got to room 42. Homicide.
You get it?
Yeah. Don just finished up. He says the handwriting matches. Victim wrote the note.
Huh. That's it then, huh?
Yeah.
You talked to his wife?
Yeah, she's pretty broken up.
Figures. Ate too fast. Oh, I got heartburn.
Well, why don't you take a couple of those Pepto-Pals or whatever it is? Let's get on with this. A lot of work here.
Hey, there's an idea. Never thought of that. Yeah, I got some in my locker over here.
You sure have.
Last time I bought a big box of them. There must be some left.
Yeah. Find them?
He thinks the husband fits in, huh?
Yeah, all the way along the... What are you doing?
Huh?
I said, what are you doing there?
Well, I found the Peptos.
Yeah, but what are you doing with them there?
Oh, putting them together. I must have dropped them sometime. See, all the pills are all broken up. I'm trying to put one together. You can't be too careful. Can't take too much. What is this? Wait a minute. Oh, there. One pill. That's all you're supposed to take, just one.
Uh-huh. I don't understand.
What do you mean?
How you can come in here and no sleep, upset stomach, and feel so good.
Yeah. You know something, Joe?
What's that?
Suppose? I really don't.
You don't, huh?
Mm-mm. Nope. That ought to be about right, I guess. Does that look like one pill to you?
I don't know, Frank. I
hope so.
It's too important a decision for me to help you with.
Oh, Pepto-Pal. Good for what ails you. Potent, Joe. Real potent. Mm-hmm.
I just wondered if you were all through now.
Oh, as soon as I scrape the crumbs away. Mm-hmm. Okay.
No,
I'm with you.
Wait a minute. Here's one you missed.
Thanks. We're half gone.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay.
Two. Yeah.
Well, are you all through now? You've had your pill and everything?
Joe, I took my pill. I've got the Pepto-Pals all worked out now. What can I do for you?
Gotcha. I'll get it.
For us?
Yeah, shooting at the corner of Broadway and San Julian.
Who's the victim?
Traffic officer. We left the office and drove to the scene of the shooting. Traffic at the intersection had come to a virtual standstill. 18 feet from the northwest corner, lying in the middle of the pedestrian crosswalk, was a uniformed traffic officer. He was wearing a white cap of the traffic division. There was a large blood stain on the right side of his chest, and his service revolver was still in his holster. By the time we got to the scene, the ambulance had arrived, and the wounded officer was being given emergency treatment. Other officers were trying to get the traffic moving again, and additional men were throwing up a blockade around the immediate vicinity in an attempt to apprehend the person who'd shot the policeman. Captain Lorman and Chief of Detectives Thad Brown arrived and took charge of the search. Frank and I checked through the crowd that had gathered, and we found a witness to the shooting.
Yeah. Well, I saw the whole thing, officer, right from the beginning. I saw it. Just about the most awful thing I ever saw.
All right, sure. If you'll just give us your name.
Roy Hickok. It's H-I-C-K-O-K.
All right, Mr. Hickok. Now, if you'll tell us what happened.
Well, I was on my way to work, walking down the street. I got to the corner here, Broadway and San Julian. I got to the corner. I stopped for a light.
Go ahead.
I just stood there waiting for it to be time to cross. All of a sudden, this car came up and slid to a stop. The light changed, and he had to stop.
Uh-huh.
He must have been going pretty fast because he went clear out into the intersection. And the officer, the one who was shot, held up his hand. I think that was the only reason the driver didn't run the light. The officer held up his hand.
All right, sir, go ahead.
Well, the fella stopped, but he was right in the middle of the crosswalk. Everybody had to go around the car, you know, out into the intersection.
Mm-hmm.
He was right in the middle, and we all had to go around it.
Yeah.
Well, he just sat there. He didn't make any try to back up or nothing. He just sat there, kind of waiting for the light to change again so he could get going.
I see.
Then the officer, the one who was shot, he started to walk over to the fella. I guess he wanted him to back up. Must have been something like that. Wanted him to get out of the way.
What happened then?
Well, all of a sudden, this guy in the car just started shooting.
Where was the officer when the shooting started?
We hadn't even got to the car yet. He must have been about 10, 12 feet from it. This guy pulled out the gun and started plowing away. Point blank, he did it, right in the policeman's face.
Yeah.
Well, everybody on the street got panicky when they heard the shooting. Started to run everywhere, yelling, screaming, real panic.
What'd the officer do?
Nothing. He stood there and looked surprised. And then he tried to get his gun out of the holster, but... Well, before he could do it, the fellow in the car shot a couple more times, and the policeman fell down.
What'd he do then?
You mean the guy in the car?
Yeah, that's right.
Well, he took off, drove right through the people, and drove down San Julian. It's a wonder he didn't kill somebody the way he drove off. Just didn't care about anybody. Barreled south on San Julian.
Did you talk to the other officers about this?
Well, not too much. Seems like as soon as it happened, there were so many people around, there wasn't much time to talk to anybody. I called down where I worked, and I told them I'd be late. I told them to expect me when I walked in. I never did see so many policemen or cars.
Oh, just a minute, will you? Folks, you'll have to get back here, please. Give us a little more room, though. All right, thank you. Can you give us a description of the car?
The one the killer drove?
Yes, sir.
Well, you bet I can. I can tell you all about it.
All right, would you go ahead?
Well, it was a dark-colored sedan. A dark blue.
Mm-hmm. What kind of car was it?
You mean the brand?
Yes, sir.
Well, I'm not real sure about that. It all happened so fast. You know, all of a sudden it was over. I only got a kind of a quick look at it because I wasn't paying much attention to it.
Well, look, folks, you'll have to stay back here, please. Frank, hold him back over there, will you? Now, what kind of a car was it?
Well, I think it was either a Plymouth or maybe a DeSoto, but I'm not sure.
But you're pretty sure about the color, are you?
Oh, yeah. It was blue, dark blue.
Well, what about the man driving the car? Did you get a good look at him?
Yeah, I guess just about everybody did. You know, sitting out there in the middle of the street like that. Everybody that went by him had a look at him.
Could you give us a description of him?
Well, what do you want to know?
Well, how about the color of his hair?
It was light, not real blonde, but a light color.
How about his eyes?
It looked like they were blue.
Mm-hmm. How old would you say the man was?
I don't know, maybe 24, 25, around in there. He wasn't real old.
Was he clean shaven?
Yeah.
How about glasses? Do you remember? Was he wearing them?
No.
Was there anything about him that would make it easier for us to identify him?
I don't think I know what you mean.
Well, was there anything about him, a scar, maybe a birthmark, something like that you might have seen?
Not that I remember. Might have had something like that, but if he did, I don't remember it.
Did you have the chance to see what the man was wearing?
Well, just that he had on a white shirt and a jacket. It looked like the ones they issue in the Army. You know, the kind of windbreaker type, light material.
Uh-huh. Did the man say anything?
If he did, I didn't hear it. As soon as he started shooting, it seemed like the roof come off. All the noise, everybody yelling, trying to get out of the way of the bullets. If he said anything, I sure didn't hear it.
I see. Now, is there anything else that you can give us on the man?
Well, there is, Sergeant, but I feel a little silly about it.
What's that, sir?
What's about the car? I told you I didn't pay much attention to it, not at first. Well, after the shooting started, then I got as good a look as I could.
Mm-hmm.
I got a pretty good look at the back of it when the guy took off.
Just a minute, I didn't hear you.
I say I got a pretty good look at the back of it when the guy took off. You know, when he went down the street.
I see.
I feel a little silly because I didn't get more.
How's that?
The license number.
Yeah.
I could only get four of the numbers.
The witness was able to give us the numbers, 1 Sugar, 139. A broadcast was gotten out carrying this information, and a search was started through auto records in an attempt to come up with the owner of the vehicle. Two men were detailed to the Department of Motor Vehicles to assist their men in the search of the files. Meantime, Chief Brown and Captain Lorman had ordered roadblocks to be put up on San Julian and all streets leading to adjoining areas. The one witness, Roy Hickok, was taken to the city hall and was shown the mug books. He was unable to come up with an identification on the suspect. 12:40 p.m. Frank put in a call to Georgia Street Receiving Hospital and found that Officer Larry Giroux was still in a critical condition and that he had not regained consciousness. His family had been notified and a car was dispatched to bring his wife to the hospital. All people in the immediate vicinity of the shooting were interrogated and their statements were taken, but none of them could give us a lead as to the identity of the suspect. 5:27 p.m., Frank and I went back to the office. While he checked by auto records, I put in a call to Captain Lorman.
Yeah, Skipper.
No, they're still checking. Yeah. Well, Frank's down there now.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, he looked at him, but he wasn't able to give us anything. No, I say he couldn't give us anything. No, last we heard, he was still unconscious. Yeah, that's right. Well, he left word that we're to be called if he comes up. Mm-hmm. No. Glinda and McCready are over there. Yeah, she's taking it pretty hard.
Joe. Mm-hmm.
Right. Just a minute. I got Skipper on the phone. If anything turns up, we'll call you.
Joe. Yeah, important.
Hold on a minute, will you, Skipper? Yeah, what do you got?
Well, they made the car.
Yeah.
It was stolen this morning.
Well, we got a pretty good piece of news. No, Frank just came in. They made the car. It was stolen this morning. We got in touch with the owner of the car and we talked to him. He told us that he'd noticed that the car was gone from the place where he'd left it the night before and that he'd filed a report on it immediately. We got a full description of the vehicle and a supplementary broadcast was gotten out. 8:14 p.m. We got a call from Georgia Street Hospital telling us that Officer Giroux had regained consciousness and he could be questioned. Frank and I left the office and drove over to see him. By the time we got there, however, he lapsed into a coma again. We talked to Dr. Sebastian. He told us that he'd removed 4 bullets from Giroux's body. One of the shots had severed the officer's spinal cord. In the event that he pulled out of it, he'd never walk again. Frank and I talked with Galindo and McCready. They'd been able to interview the wounded officer, but they hadn't been able to get any additional information from him. As we walked down the hall, we met Mrs. Giroux.
Sergeant Friday?
Yes, ma'am.
I'm Ellen Giroux, Larry's wife.
Yes, ma'am.
Do they know yet? Do they know if Larry's going to be all right?
Well, it'd be better if you talked to Dr. Sebastian, Mrs. Giroux.
I have. He tells me they don't know yet. How can they say that? They don't know. Larry's been here for almost 12 hours. They must know something. Why won't they tell me?
We're sorry, Mrs. Giroux.
Have you caught the man yet? The man who did this to Larry, have you got him yet?
No, ma'am, not yet.
Then what are you doing here? Why aren't you out looking for him?
We're doing everything we can, ma'am.
But you haven't caught him. You're all running around looking, but you haven't caught him. Well, that's doing a lot of good. It makes me feel a lot better to know that the man who shot my husband is still running free.
We're sorry.
That doesn't help, Sergeant. I can't take it home with me and spread out your sorrow in front of my children. They're still going to want to know where their father is. They're still going to want to have him back. Your good wishes aren't going to be enough.
Joe, I'll check the office.
All right. Tell the skipper we're going to tag Metro Division.
Right.
Ms. Giroux, we know how you feel. We know what's going through your mind. My partner there was just shot not too long ago, and I've been right here in the same place waiting for a report, too, just like you. I know what it is to see the doctor come out of a treatment room and not say anything. I know there isn't much I can say to make it easier. But we can tell you this. There are 4,000 policemen in this city. Every one of them is looking for the man who shot your husband.
Joe?
Yeah.
The suspect.
Yeah.
They found him.
The tip had come in from a man who had phoned the complaint board and said that he knew where the suspect was hiding. The man wouldn't give his name. Immediately, 2 cars were dispatched to the address. It was a cheap rooming house on East 4th Street. The manager of the place said that there was a tenant who matched the description of the suspect in a room on the 5th floor. He'd given the name James Krell. When the investigating officers had approached the room, they were met with gunfire. They returned the fire. The building was evacuated and the streets in front of the building were roped off. Several more cars arrived from Metro Division and the building was completely surrounded. Frank and I stopped by the office and picked up tear gas equipment. From what we were told, the suspect had barricaded the door leading into the room with furniture. The only way we had to get him out alive was with gas. Frank and I talked with Captain Lorman and with Chief Brown. It was decided to use a flight right shell and blast through the door. Frank took the gun and we went up to the fifth floor. The halls were empty.
You all set?
Let's give him another chance.
All right.
All right, Krell, we'll give you one more chance to come out of there. Come on, Krell, open the door and throw the gun out.
He's not coming out.
All right, that's the last time around, Krell.
Get out of here, Pop. Get out of here, leave me alone. You try to come through that door and I'll kill you. I swear I will. I'll kill you where you stand.
All right, Frank, let's put the mask on.
Right.
You all set?
Yeah.
I gotta go. Should be coming up.
Yeah.
He's moving that furniture.
I'll cover this guy.
All right, watch it.
I'm coming out. I give up. I quit.
All right, throw that gun out here. Throw the gun out first, and then you follow it.
Okay, okay. I'm doing what you say. Here's the gun. I quit. Here's the gun.
I got it.
All right, Carl. Come on out with your hand behind your head. Come on, move.
All right, don't shoot. Don't shoot. I'm doing like you say. I'm coming.
All right, come on, move. Down here. Come on, move, Krell. All right, this will do. Now stand still.
Hands up against the wall. Come on, Krell, do what he says.
I can't breathe. I'll do whatever you say, but I can't breathe. I can't breathe. That gas.
You better get used to it, Krell.
What?
If that cop dies, they won't let you walk out of the room. The suspect was taken to Georgia Street Receiving Hospital for treatment. When the investigating officers had approached the room that he was hiding in, Krell had shot at them through the door. They'd returned the fire, and one of the bullets had shattered his left wrist. We got his full name, and we ran him through R&I. We found that he had a minor record in California and was, at the time, a deserter from the Army. His wrist was taken care of, and then Frank and I talked to him in the treatment room.
Lousy deal all the way around.
Is that right?
Sure, you guys had no right to come up there and shoot off that gas.
We didn't call it.
Lousy deal.
Why'd you shoot that officer?
I thought he was going to shoot me with self-defense.
When they picked him up, his gun was still in his holster.
Then somebody put it back.
Why'd he want to shoot you?
Who knows? Who can figure any cop? You're all sadists.
Why'd you do it?
Look, I'll tell you nice and plain. I drove up to the signal. I stopped. This wise cop come over, started rousing me about being in the intersection. I told him to shut up. I don't have to take that kind of talk from nobody. He pulled a gun. It was self-defense.
We got a couple of people saw the whole thing. They tell a little different.
They're either psycho or else you're paying them off.
How long you been AWOL?
Who says I am?
The Army.
I could square that beef with him.
What about that car you were driving this morning?
What about it?
Where'd you get it?
Belongs to a friend of mine. I borrowed it.
Owner reported it stolen.
He must have forgotten he told me to take it.
What's the friend's name?
I forget.
They'd pay you to remember.
I have a very bad memory.
Why'd you shoot the officer?
Because he was going to shoot me.
He just walked up and said he was going to shoot you. Is that
yeah,
it?
Yeah, guy's a sadist. All you cops are. Put that uniform on. You all think you can boss anybody around. Well, you made a mistake with this one. Isn't anybody bosses me around.
How long you been in town?
Why?
Answer the question.
Couple of weeks.
You've been AWOL for over 6 months. Now, where you been?
Around.
Where?
I like to travel.
Manager of that rooming house says you just checked in this morning. Is that right?
You talked to her. I didn't.
All right, where you been staying?
There goes the memory again.
Look, you're in trouble, Krell. Talk like that won't do you any good.
One of those things. I wish I could help you fellas, but there's nothing I can do.
Where'd you get the car?
From a friend.
What's his name?
I don't remember.
But he said you could take it.
Yeah?
Then why'd he report it stolen?
Ask him.
We did. He says he doesn't know you.
Where'd you get the gun?
Picked it up.
Where?
Bought it. Don't know the name of the store.
It's being checked now. You might as well save time and tell us.
You're getting paid.
What'd the officer say before you shot him?
Didn't say anything. Just pulled his gun. I was faster. Self-defense.
Now, you might think this is a game, Krell. You maybe think you're a big man sitting here, but I want to set you straight. You're in trouble. More trouble than you've ever been in before. We've got at least 20 people who saw you deliberately gun that cop. They're willing to swear to it in court.
You know what I think it was?
Now, you go ahead and tell us.
It was this kind of purple flash, and all of a sudden this cop was laying there. Maybe it wasn't self-defense. Maybe it was temporary insanity. Hey, how's that sound? Temporary insanity. He die?
No, not yet.
Cops and cats, you can't kill him.
You made a pretty good try. All right, mister, on your feet.
What for?
Come on, let's go.
We're going to jail?
Get up, Krell.
Come on.
Maybe you're going to take me to the gas chamber right now, huh? Do without a trial or nothing. Just lock me up and drop the eggs.
You're awful close to it, mister.
You got to get me there first.
You stand in front of it right now.
I tell you what, I'll give you 10-1 I don't make it.
Come on.
Well, I bet you guys would just love to have me make a break, huh?
Now, you listen, Krell. With that arm, we can't put handcuffs on you, but you're still in custody. Don't try anything.
Well, how about it? You'd like that, wouldn't you? Get your pictures in all the papers. Heroic cops killed criminal.
All right, in here.
Yeah, you guys would really like it.
I'm going to give you something for free, Krell.
Well, yeah, what's that?
You talk a lot, but you don't say anything.
Always happens. Put a guy in a uniform right away, he's a big man. A bum on the outside, but just give him a badge and a suit right away, he's big.
Yeah, sure. Come on.
Hey, how's about a cigarette?
Here.
Well, thanks. Got a match?
Come on, move.
Car's back this way.
Hey, wait a minute.
What do you want?
A cigarette. Not doing me much good without a match.
All right, here.
Grab him, Joe. Hold it up, Krell. All right, Krell, hold it up. Hold it up or I'll shoot. He's down. Come on.
How about it, Joe? Well, I guess he was right.
Huh?
That bet about the gas chamber?
Yeah.
He won't make it. A doctor was called down from the hospital, and the suspect, James Krell, was pronounced dead. The body was removed to the county morgue. In going over the dead man's effects, we found a receipt from one of the downtown hotels. There were two names listed on it, and a notation to the effect that the rent on room 517 had been paid for a week. The other name on the slip was Sidney Larson. We checked it through R&I, and we found that Larson had a long felony record in California and had been paroled 2 months previously. The report came back on the gun that Krell had used. It was among seven revolvers that had been stolen from a hardware store in Tulare on May 6th. The other six guns were still missing. We checked with Dr. Sebastian on Officer Giroux's condition. We were told that the policeman was still unconscious, but that he had passed the critical stage. Mrs. Giroux collapsed when she heard the news that her husband would never walk again, and she was placed under sedative. 10:48 p.m. Frank and I left the office and drove over to the hotel named on the receipt that we found. It was a run-down place with a potted rubber plant in the lobby. We rang the bell on the counter and waited.
Yeah?
You the manager here?
Well, right now I am, yeah. What?
Police officers want some information.
About what?
Take a look at this. Is that one of your receipts?
Let me take a look. Now, wait a minute. Let me get the lights on so I can see. Yeah, there's the name right on the top. Sure looks like it's one of ours, don't it?
You recognize the two names on it?
Now, wait a minute. Yeah, I do. Yeah, I recognize them good.
This fellow Larson's in now.
Well, I don't know. We don't keep a very close tab on the people who stay here. Service isn't too good, but we don't ask questions. Change the sheets once a week. We don't ask questions.
Is he in?
Well, he might be. I'd have to check it.
There's a police investigation, mister. Is Larson in?
I'll check the box. Well, key's gone. Must be upstairs.
He alone?
Can't say. Might be. I didn't hear nobody go up, but then I don't listen too good.
Show us the room.
You mean I got to go up with you?
Come on, mister. Let's go.
Look, we got a nice, quiet hotel. We don't cause no trouble. There's no reason for you cops to come snooping around.
You got the pass key?
Yeah. Let's go. Have to take the elevator up. I can't go the stairs.
All right. Go ahead.
Uh-huh.
Fifth floor.
How long the two of them been here?
Huh?
Larson and Krell, how long they been here?
I'll have to check the book for that. Can't carry those things around in my head. If I did, there wouldn't be no room for the important things.
About when?
What?
About when did they come in?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe 2-3 weeks around in there.
They got any friends?
Well, most everybody's got a few friends.
Any of them come around here?
No, not that I've seen. We're not snoopy like some.
I'll get the door.
All right, which way?
What?
Which way is 517?
To the left. I don't want no trouble here now, huh?
We're not going to make any.
Look, this is a quiet hotel. We don't want any of the tenants to get sore. You guys are going to walk out. I got to live here. I don't want no trouble.
Here it is.
All right, give me the key.
Yeah.
I'll take that side, Frank.
Yeah.
Look, you stand back out of the way and keep still.
No trouble now, huh? Please.
Keep your voice down,
no trouble.
Will you?
Get a gun.
Get out of here, cop! All right, come on. Out of here.
Pete, get up.
What are you doing in here? You've got no right to come in like this.
I'll check the room, Joe.
What are you looking for? I'm registered. You check my parole officer. He'll tell you I'm clean.
What about the gun?
All right, so I got a gun.
You're an ex-con, aren't you?
Big deal.
All right, let's go.
Where?
You've been there before.
Take a look, Joe. Five of them.
All right, where'd you get these?
You find out, cop. You're getting nothing from me.
All right, come on.
Take it easy.
Let's go.
What about Krell? You get him, too?
That's right.
You got him in jail?
He's dead.
Krell?
That's right. He tried to make a break, and it didn't work.
Oh, poor kid. Didn't know what it was all about. Wanted to be a tough guy.
Yeah, and you were going to show him how, weren't you?
Nice kid. He wanted to be a big man. We had it all planned. Gonna hit the big time. Got the guns. He went out to get a car this morning. That's probably why he killed the cop. Krell got scared. He didn't know he wanted to be big. He wanted people to talk about him.
Don't worry about it, mister.
Huh?
They will.
The coroner's jury returned a verdict that the death of James Edward Krell was justifiable homicide. Sidney Carter Larson was filed on for ex-convict with a gun, and upon completion of sentence on that count was released to the authorities of Tulare, California, for prosecution on a charge of burglary. You have just heard Dragnet, the authentic story of your police force in action, and starring Jack Webb, a presentation of the United States Armed Forces Radio Service.
For the second half of the program, we heard Dragnet, The Big Stop, with an original air date of the 4th of May, 1954. Dragnet, of course, made Jack Webb famous nationally, as well as when he converted the show to television. My name is Arthur, and this has been the Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org. Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio. Just as an aside on the escape that I played on the first half of the program, Night in Havana, I guess William Conrad was in that. He was noted for Gunsmoke, and he also played the menacing policeman Warcheck in Johnny Madero. Thanks for listening.
Due to COVID-19, WMFO DJs are pre-recording their shows for broadcast on air. We can still accept phone calls, but the phone line is in voicemail mode. Call 855-915-9636 and be sure to leave the DJ's name in the voicemail so we can forward it to the correct person. The following program was recorded earlier. Enjoy.